Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to Section 503 Community of Practice Conference Call. During the presentation, all participants will be in the listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Wednesday, June 4th, 2014. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Felix Stump. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Frank, and hello, everyone. Good afternoon to most of you, to morning maybe to a couple. My name is Felix Stump. I'm the Deputy Project Director for Ticket Tour Project and the Operations Support Manager. And welcome again to, this is our third Community of Practice conference call around the Section 503 regulations. Today, we're lucky enough to have Kevin Nickerson, who's representing the National Disability Institute. He's going to talk to us about the American Job Centers and how and whether or not and how ENs can engage with your local AJCs to help support ticket holders. Before I turn it over, though, I'll just remind you that we do have a chat room feature available for today's call. That link was provided in an email that went out promoting the call, but if you do not have that, you can go to our website, yourticketswork.com, click on the community practice section, and you should find the link to the chat for today's call and for the rest of the community practice calls as well. And lastly, I'll just remind you all that these calls, these community practice calls, really are intended to be open dialogues. We will get to hear from Kevin and his colleagues just a little bit, but most of today's call, we hope, is going to be hearing from you and allowing you to dial in, ask questions, provide answers where appropriate, and really just kind of talk back and forth as much as possible. So it'll be a short presentation, but we really looked to you all to provide most of today's content. And so with that, I will go ahead and turn it over to Kevin.
Well, thank you, Felix, and thank you folks for joining today. Hopefully you're enjoying some nice weather after that very, very long winter we've had. So Felix alluded to this, but I just want to start out by saying, and first of all, you can see the title of the training today. We really want to talk about how we're doing in engaging our American job centers for the benefit of our ticket holders. But as Felix alluded to, today's community practice will really be a combination of sharing information they've put together, followed by some discussion opportunities. So I'll be counting on your participation on today's call. We can go to the next slide. These are some of the things we hope to cover today. We want to look at some of the resources offered in the job center. And I will say, too, that for many of you, they've been on all these calls that we've been having around this topic and others. I've shared some of this information before, and I feel it's important to review it again. So we're going to talk a little bit about the AJC resources. We're going to explore AJC staffing or folks that we think you should really know in our centers. And I think it's important also to give you a bit of a history lesson, although brief, about the AJC's involvement in serving people with disabilities. And at that point, we'll break for a discussion opportunity with a couple of questions I'll pose to you. We'll move on again and discuss partnering and AJC, some ideas around that. And I've identified some next steps that I'd recommend, again, followed by a discussion opportunity. Lastly, I'm going to discuss the use of SAM, and that's a System for Work Management and the National Labor Exchange to identify federal contractors by region. And I'd be remiss if I didn't give credit to others who have also talked about this. I know Pam Walker has reviewed this on a former COP. It might be even that Susan did. Those were the first two sessions that we had. But I'm going to take and look at this in a little more detail and in a way that I think is very useful for us. So we'll dig a little deeper into that and see how that can be beneficial for us in finding contractors in our local areas. Next slide. So in short, let's look at sort of an overview of what American Job Centers are. And I should say, and this is probably still coined as one-stops in one-stop career centers in many states, including my own. I should say also that I'm located in New York. But it is now officially referenced as American Job Centers. So hopefully you all know what these centers are, but, in short, let me just say that these are located across the country, and we are here to provide a variety of services to not only employers, but all job seekers. And when I say all job seekers, I say that because it includes individuals with disabilities. Some of the services that you can count on, you know, at AJCs, regardless of where you go, and there will be variations depending on which state you're in and even across localities, but these are some of the things you can expect at our AJCs, and that's workshops that focus on a variety of topics such as basic job search, interviewing skills, basic computer skills. A lot of our centers use products like Metrics and or Prove It, which are great resources to help people hone basic skills. I put SSA work incentives in there. Yes, that's right, believe it or not, especially in light of the new Disability Employment Initiative projects that we have in multiple states with a focus on ENs, which I'll talk about. We also have now, in many of our centers, workshops on Social Security work incentives. Sometimes that's through collaboration, too, with our WIPA projects. We have training funds in our centers known as individual training accounts, and that is based on eligibility and availability of funds. Certainly resume development and information about the labor exchange. Well, the labor exchange system is actually a way that our job seekers get to match electronically with the job leads that employers provide us. And each state has that. On-the-job training funds, also based on eligibility, certainly can find labor market information there, and connections to employers, which is why this is so important a resource for our ticket holders. And if you're wondering, and, you know, I have to assume that folks, there's folks on the line that know a lot about this, and there's some folks on the line that probably don't. So, excuse me, so we put a locator in here. It's called the service locator, and this is how you find your AJC locally. So you can click through that and just put in your area and figure out which AJCs are in your local area. Okay, next slide. Excuse me. So here's some staff that we think you should know. And also, you know, the titles of each of these staff are not necessarily the same across states and or centers, but generally speaking, these are the categories of titles that we have in each of our centers. Certainly for the purposes of today's discussion and something I've talked about in the past, we have business service representatives or BSR teams at each of our centers. And that's the staff or our AJC single point of contact for businesses. And, you know, I got thinking about this person, too, in terms of what we're trying to accomplish here. And I want you to know that this person often organizes events locally, you know, targeting employer training needs and so forth. So when I think about that, I think about things like the new Section 503 amendments. And this may offer an opportunity for you to suggest such an event if something hasn't happened, and maybe even help in planning that. And also we have WIA CASEs, Workforce Investment Act case managers, and these folks oversee the services of customers who are enrolled in intensive case management services and or short-term training. So in other words, that's the person who would help customers access WIA training funds. I know that's kind of elusive, and a lot of folks have asked me questions about that, and the best advice I can give you is to get to know your local center to see where they're at in terms of available funds and eligibility. Next is an employment counselor. And I remember years ago when I first really started to inject this more heavily into our center, where I worked for a decade, I recognized right away that as the caseload grew, there was no way you know, I could do this alone. And this is a person that I leaned on heavily in our office, and for good reason, because this is a person who's really able to assist customers that are developing a career path through the use of a variety of assessments. I won't even tell you which ones, because that's also going to vary based on offices. But it's very helpful for our ticket holders to connect with this person who might be entering the workforce maybe for the first time, or maybe they are, because of their disability, looking at a career change. And so this person, much like a vocational rehabilitation counselor without the focus on disability, can help folks really kind of retool based on skill sets they have where they might want to go in the future. In terms of targeted populations, and this is where most of my life in the center I worked resided, our offices have dedicated staff that serve customers with specific needs, such as veterans reps, and we have multiple programs for vets, older worker program, disability resource coordinators, and that's where I fit in for many years. Actually, prior to that, the Navigator program I'll talk about. And these are located currently in pilot regions of states that have DOL Disability Employment Initiative grants. And if you're wondering what the heck that's all about, that's okay, because when we move to the next slide, we're going to talk about what those grants are all about. That was my cue. Thanks, folks. So over the years, you know, and we all have a different history in terms of our centers and our, you know, use of the centers and our perception of the centers. But USDOL has supported the expansion of services for customers with disabilities through many targeted initiatives since the inception of the Workforce Investment Act of 1998. I've actually left one prior to DPN off of here because I wanted it to be a brief history lesson. But I want you to see that USDOL has done a lot to really further the services for people with disabilities in our centers. And I look at the primary initiative being the Disability Program Navigator Initiative, which ran from 2003 to 2010, and that really was my entry, actually, almost. I was involved with our center prior to that, but that was when I entered our system and spent years as a navigator, so it was really an eye-opener for me, coming from a private rehabilitation agency background. But this initiative was really designed and focused on access. If I was to look at one thing, it's really about access. And I can kind of break that down into different access points. And that would be sort of programmatic access for folks with disabilities, physical access, looking at, you know, the actual structure. And then a big one was really attitudinal barriers that got in the way, and that was as important as the others. We also saw the beginning of some employment network efforts under the Disability Program Navigator Initiative during these years, although it was not required of this grant. Where we're at now is under the Disability Employment Initiative, which started in 2010 and runs presently. This really did build on the lessons learned from the DPN initiative to, you know, to further promote and integrate services for folks with disabilities. Plus, it does require that state DEI projects and pilot sites to operate as employment networks. So this is a key distinction and definitely important for today's conversation. Also of note is that DEI projects have to hire a disability resource coordinator to be located in each of our pilot sites. And this is a 3-year funding window. I'll also note that under DEI, there is a strong emphasis on partnerships and collaboration. Also an interesting point to make for today's call. And many of our projects have committed to getting DRC certified as work incentive counselors. Lastly, I'll say about DEI is there has been funds and a focus on improving and or adding to the assistive technology available in our pilot sites. Next slide. So this next slide shows you that since 2010, there have been 4 rounds of funded grants covering a total of 26 states. At this time, the round 1 projects are over. Some recently over because there was some extensions provided that brought some of our round 1 projects into the beginning of 2014. But they were slated to end, and most did, in 2013. Then we had round 2, and I won't list, you know, I won't read these states, but this is going to be available for you to review later, and, of course, round 3 and round 4. I have a note here that the DOL is in the process of publishing a solicitation to fund a 5th round of grantees, but that actually changed since the time that I put the PowerPoint together, and it was released last week, so you can find information on the round 5 DEI solicitation online easily. Also, I've provided a link that provides you more information about the Disability Employment Initiative if you wanted to research some of that. The next slide shows you sort of a map that I think is useful to kind of get an idea of where the states are that are involved, and also shows you that, interestingly, some of the Round 1 projects that were involved also received funding under Round 4, and those are in those orange with lines visual there. So I didn't put this on this slide, and I should have for you, but if you wanted to find this map and look at it more closely, rather than through the PowerPoint, you can certainly go to our site at www.dei-ideas.org. And so that's the brief history lesson. Let's move on now to an opportunity to talk with each of you. And this is one of those discussion opportunity points. And my talking point is that AJSA services include listing customers in a statewide database. We talked about that, including job matching services to qualified candidates once they're registered. And so, therefore, my questions for you to ponder are ENs registering all ticket holders for these services because of that connection to the job match? And what has been your experience in assisting ticket holders in general in utilizing AJC services? So let's start there, and I'm going to turn it back, and let's see if we can get some folks in the queue to have some discussion.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. One moment, please, for the first question.
Thank you. I will say I know some of you out there using these services, and I hate to call names, but I will, if needed.
We do have a question on the phone from the line of Susan Webb. Please proceed.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Susan.
Hi. You know, I have a question about your number one there. I've been on there. We're encouraging our ticket users to post their resumes there to do job search. What is happening from the employer side? Do they really use the job exchange to find people? And how do they specifically know if someone is a 503 eligible candidate? And before you answer that, I do know that in Arizona, one of the things that our job exchange is doing is they are putting a field, adding a field to the profile where a person who puts their profile on there, a ticket user, can show a referral source. And if they show that referral source, then an employer can tell that that person is 503 eligible. So what do you see happening in that regard? Are employers, I know it's one thing for us to have our ticket users post and to look for jobs. It's quite another to see if employers are using it from their end, too, to recruit people.
Well, as always, I can count on good questions from you, Susan, often questions I can't answer. But let me just say I think that, yes, employers use this, and when there are matches and they get candidates, they certainly often choose from some of those candidates folks to employ. So, yeah, in terms of the first general question, yes, it does get used, and those matches do result in real jobs. In terms of your second question, I almost don't dare to answer it because that's going to be so variable based on not only each state, but what within the state each center is up to, Susan. So, if that's something that a center has, one, permission to do, which I don't think is a bad idea, by the way, I wouldn't know how to answer that in terms of where we're at nationally, because it's going to vary. So I'm actually pleased to hear that you've had some experience where you're seeing that happen, and maybe others know more and want to chime in too.
Okay, and then if you have any stats on that in terms of how many people that have posted to the job exchange have actually been recruited by employers directly instead of the other way around, that would be really good.
So how many that post actually got recruited?
Yeah, that the employer contacted them, yeah. That if they do post, what is the incidence of employers actually contacting them as opposed to those who apply themselves and go through the normal application process?
I'm actually going to make it two questions, and I will look into that for you. So it not only that actually got contacted, but then of those, maybe how many got employed, too. Let me see what I can dig up for you, at least in states that I think would be willing to work with me on that, okay?
That would be great. Thank you, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
We have another question from the line of Cynthia Spenson. Please proceed. Ms. Benson, your line is open. Please proceed with your question.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes. Hi. My question is that how would I have my clients access the labor exchange?
So first step is to get your customers to the centers themselves. Are you using your local job center to get folks registered?
No, this is my first time hearing about this.
Okay. And that's what I said up front. This is for all folks that know a lot and folks that this is new for. So that's the first step I'd recommend. And if you look at that slide that I gave you that has the locator.
Mm-hmm.
Click through that and try to find out where your local center is, and then go get to know those folks and say, look, I serve a number of folks, and when I was in our center, sometimes I would coordinate with providers to even have folks come in groups to help orient them to our center and services. So I would just get to know folks in your center, although you can just go in and get somebody registered. You don't need an appointment for that.
Okay. All right. And then I have another question, and I have a statement, then a question. Okay. As a licensed certified rehab counselor, vocational rehab counselor, a lot of the services that the centers are providing, I do those, including I can do a career assessment based on my credentials. So my question is when I go in and one of my clients sign up, do they have to go through all of these steps, like the workshops, et cetera?
No, that's a good question.
Okay.
I think I'd play devil's advocate to myself even and say, you know, what's the value added if you can do a lot of these things, right? And I'll just put it out there.
Yeah.
So I think it's a fair question, and I think my answer would be that, you know, the one thing you don't have access to comes back to the question Susan just asked is, you know, you don't have access to that database unless people are registered necessarily in terms of the matching that occurs.
Right.
If we have a customer internally that matches a job lead that's available, staff will actually match that person to the job, and that goes to the employer directly. So it's an advantage to your customers to have that available to them. But
absolutely.
Will you be... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, and then I have another question.
Well, to your point about being able to do the assessments, you're probably right. You'll probably do a fine job with that, and you're really in tune with your customer, so I don't think, especially maybe with your background, I'm guessing serving folks with disabilities, that you might have even a better handle on that.
Okay, and then also because of my credentials, I also can write the letter of letter of certification that somebody has a disability.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is that when I write that letter, would that go with my client's resume in the labor exchange system?
I don't think that would be the best place to attach it, honestly.
Okay. All right.
But it certainly could come in handy in other ways. But I don't think that's where I would lead with that. Just to clarify for folks, though, if somebody discloses internally, that doesn't go to employers. That's internal, for internal use, for us to identify services and resources for folks, okay?
Okay.
I want to answer your other – I never did answer your question. Do folks have to do all the things that I mentioned? And no, there are folks that are required to come to our centers because maybe they're on unemployment insurance and so forth, and there's folks that can come in and use what's called self-service, which is basically, you know, voluntarily you're going in to use this resource because it's a good resource. So the answer is they don't have to do those things, the things they don't need. They can just choose to be involved in the things that would be beneficial to them.
Okay. And my last question, piggybacking on my other question, is so the letter of certification, would that be something that the AJC would want for the client's packet?
Well, you know, disability in our centers is voluntary.
Okay.
And we don't really get to the level of detail asking specifics about disability. Okay?
Okay. So I was just thinking the scenario.
You know, self-attestation is all they need in our centers to move forward.
Okay, great.
I appreciate your questions. I think they were good ones. Thank you.
Thank you. You clarified a lot for me.
Awesome. I'm glad you're out there helping folks.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Felix. Frank, before we take the next call from the queue, I just wanted to draw attention to a couple questions that came up in the chat. Kevin, Susan Webb, about halfway through your last conversation, mentions in the chat that she says, I already provide all those services as an EN. What I need to do is give our ticket users access to the state job exchange to post their profiles and search for jobs. Do they actually have to register with the One Stop in order to do that?
So in terms of, I think Susan's talking about the National Labor Exchange, and certainly anybody can go and take a look at jobs there. To be registered within our state database, you know, or a state database, I would say that the person would have to be registered.
So in order for the beneficiary to post up their, they would need to register with their AJC?
Yes.
Okay. And I'll let Susan maybe dial back in or post the chat if he wants some further discussion on that. And then immediately following, there was a comment that goes a little bit, I think, to something that came up in the last conversation. The comment from Misty about she uses the phrase one stop. Our one stop is a ticket to working in, and they want the beneficiaries to unassign from us and assign their ticket to them. Go ahead.
But that's a little bit open-ended. Missing a little context for me to move forward with that response.
Okay. So Misty, why don't you dial into the queue and maybe say some more about that online if you're willing to do that. If not, we can just kind of I think that this is Felix. I think there's always, as much as we try to promote collaboration, I think there will be these instances where sometimes it kind of turns into a competition, and I hope that does not happen at all, really, and certainly not for the most part. I think the entire point of today's call is to encourage ENs to collaborate and to partner either formally or informally with their local AJC, and even if those AJCs are ENs, and I trust that comment is valid, and I know that happens sometimes, but I would hope that given the fact that in a lot of cases, while there is some overlap, of course, in the services provided, there is certainly also some services that each entity provides that the other does not. And if that's the case, that you could kind of work together collaboratively to serve that client. And I think from each organization's standpoint, you end up benefit whatever you might lose out on in revenue for that one client, if you decide to split it somehow or come up with some arrangement where you're sharing the revenue, you'll end up benefiting in the long run, I think, because you'll be able to work with that AJC to provide or arrange to provide a menu of services beyond what you might have been individually capable.
I agree with that, Felix, and I think I would also say, as an example, you know, I can't remember who commented that you already provide a lot of those services. I've been a benefits and work incentive a counselor for 20 years, and I've been to many trainings. And, I'm sure folks on this call have been to many of those trainings, too. So I would challenge you to think about, have you been to a workshop with presenter A and then went to a similar workshop with presenter B and learned something new? I certainly have. Over the years, have learned so much from many. So I think that, you know, what you're talking about, Felix, is really let's use the resources we have, and that's how I feel about this too, and really why I wanted to talk about encouraging partnering with our centers. And really, this is about best services for our customers.
Now, right. And all I'll say before we go back to the phone lines is that to your point, Misty, we are encouraging, as Kevin says, we are encouraging EANs to partner with the AJCs. We are also encouraging the AJCs to partner with EANs. And we are encouraging AJC EANs to partner with other EANs. So there's learning that should take place on both sides, and it's it certainly is a two-way street. So,
Felix?
Yeah.
Maybe we should move ahead. I'll share a little more information. These are great questions, folks, and I appreciate that you're involved, you're engaged, and this is great. But maybe if I threw the next couple slides up and open the lines again, I mean, if people have questions that you'll see in the next discussion opportunity, I've left an opening for similar thoughts to be discussed too.
Okay, and one thing I'll really quickly point out is Paul Luttrell made a really great comment in response to Misty in the chat. He's in Albuquerque, and they when they have cases like this, they alternate the assignment from one client to the next, and it sounds like it kind of averages out in the long run. And that's working out pretty well. So there are different ways to approach this. But yeah, Kevin, I'll go ahead and as you say, move to the next slide. But before we do so, Frank, how many questions are dialed up in the queue right now?
So far, we have one question.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and take that one, Kevin, move on. That way, we can not leave this one hanging.
Absolutely.
We have a question from Ann Austin. Please proceed.
Well,
hi, Ann.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing? I'm glad you're on the call, and I appreciate you getting in the queue.
Thank you. I have something you can probably unravel for me. Here in Colorado, we have our statewide, you know, job exchange connecting Colorado, and then also out there, there's America's Job Exchange, also advertising jobs in Colorado, and that one says, you know, that the people, the jobs that are on there with federal contractors, like, do those two things talk at all? And is it, if an employer is on the American Job Exchange, are they truly all federal contractors or is it a mix? And that would have 503 implications.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I forgot to preface by saying that I'm only taking simple questions from this point forward. I'm going to talk a little more about the National Labor Exchange and how we get leads there. You know, the truth is, in terms of the technology and how all that interplays, I don't know, and I'll be honest. I don't know how that gets exchanged with the other databases. I know they do talk to each other. Some of them do. And I'm going to give you the National Labor Exchange as an example because they pull leads from, well, I'll tell you that in the next slide. It kind of pulls information from different places to make sure it's up to date. In terms of your question, I don't know specifically if Colorado is doing that.
Okay. And I do, for me, I have to enroll a person in Connecting Colorado to get services at a workforce center, which I'm doing. And it does work well, and I can get them access to some of the stuff you talked about, like Prove It. And that is really working for my EN. So thank you.
So you're using some of that stuff to help?
I am using some of that.
With the basic skills updates and so forth. I always was a fan of Prove It and Metrics because the menu was so extensive. People had plenty of choices.
Yeah,
so
thank you.
That's good to hear. I appreciate it, Ann. Thank you. I wish I could have been a little more helpful on that question for you. We'll have to do some research.
Okay.
All right, Felix, let's move forward and give some more thoughts and see what other difficult questions these folks have for me today. So in terms of partnering with AJCs and when we talk about EN operations, and I thought I'd just, you know, go right for the most difficult point in looking at what if both the AJC and community-based organization in general, is what I'm, the CBO, are ENs. So what if the private organization and the AJC are ENs? How do we get around this? Because I figured, you know, if one or the other is not, it becomes a lot easier, okay? So I thought we'd just talk about that. In fact, you talked about Paul. I had him in my notes here for this slide because I think they're a great example of how this can work. First, and the reason why I provided some of the history is you have to understand where the AJC is coming from, what they've done already in serving customers, I think, before you approach them so you have some sense that, you know, they're either, you know, needing a lot of help or they've had great success. And some of those links I provided you can help you get there. I can tell you that I really believe this requires a shared vision. between you and your partner agency and an alliance that draws upon really your collective skill sets. And I think Felix talked a little bit about that too, where we have different skills that CDOs have versus our AJCs and vice versa. And when you combine the resources of both, that can be pretty powerful. And I give the example of work incentive counseling because while I said there are some centers that have that, I don't think that's the rule. It's more the exception at this time. Also, you know, I think this requires specific agreements with the AJC, like likely, you know, in the form of some MOUs or something like that. I think you have to really be careful in spelling out how, if there is revenue sharing, and, you know, as well as timing of ticket assignments and unassignments, and that's where I think very, very much of Adelante and Paul's arrangement there in New Mexico. And I'd be happy to hear his comments on that. That's your cue, Paul. And it's also possible that revenue will support the shared vision of the CDO and AJC. For example, maybe it's just about what the revenue does, not who gets which part of the revenue. For example, and this goes back to an agreement I have had my hand in putting in play in our center years ago that really had the vision of keeping that person in play that provides disability services, and to this day that person, there is still a person there focused on that and using this revenue. So those are some thoughts around, I think, a more difficult partnering arrangement. And we'll get, after this next slide, we'll get to another stopping point to maybe talk about this further. So we can go to the next slide. So in terms of steps, I think that you have to take to even get this started, and some of you have not only gotten this started, but you've got agreements and have really advanced your purpose with your AJC effectively. But I think first you have to develop some process for referrals, right, both ways, both to your centers and to the community-based organization if it's not already established. You also, and most importantly, and I think this is really the foundation of partnering, is relationships, right? And I think that starts, in my opinion, you know, I would recommend that you speak with your AJC management manager, so your center manager, and then you'll also get to know the WIB director. And discuss those processes, really, for accessing leads, right, from the business service rep. We talked about that before, but I think that's really where you start that relationship, and then you move on to getting to know the others in the center. Again, you can explore either formal or informal partnerships, but you should know and remember that, you know, some AJCs will not be familiar with the ticket program or EN operations, and it's also possible some are not familiar with Section 503 amendments. So, you know, the solution is to really go prepared to give your little elevator speech on the ticket program and what you do and who you serve and your role as ENs, and also on Section 503, not that you have to be the expert, but, you know, hey, there's this, you know, new amendments are increasing the hiring of folks with disabilities, especially federal, you know, so forth. So just a 30-second elevator speech so you're prepared. And the next slide is an offering for you to think about some questions. And we have also talked about this a number of times, partnering with AJC. So really what I'm hoping to see today is, and I think one of these is duplicative, but let's look at some of these questions. Have you identified the AJCs located in your service delivery area? And I know one caller had not, and that's fine, and that's why we're talking about this today. So that's, you know, the first step. Maybe some of you have, and you want to talk about where you've gone from there. Other thoughts, has your EN been accessing supports? We've talked about that. We can continue that conversation. Have you connected with the manager and or the business service rep? Are there examples of functional partnerships? And I know there's somebody out there that could tell me about that. Are there examples of accessing job leads, like Susan is trying to get to very specifically, and or utilizing services for ticket holders you're serving? And basically, are there examples of progress or experience you've had with these kinds of partnerships? So any of those talking points you want to share with peers, it doesn't even have to be a question. You could talk about things you've done, and maybe we can learn from you as well today. So I think with that, I'll turn it back to see if we can get some folks in the queue, and we'll talk a little more.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone.
We do have several questions, so we'll start with a question from Craig Dolan. Please proceed.
Yeah, I'm just curious, is that when we're talking about partnering with the AGCs, is there a statewide listing that would be available to determine who all the employment networks are in a particular state?
Oh, well, that's an excellent question, and I'm going to let Felix answer that.
Absolutely. There's a directory on a website at chooseworktw.net. Their Find Help directory will let you pull up a map where you can pick a state, and you'll see all the ENs, in fact, all the providers. It includes WIPA organizations, ENs, VR offices. I think that's about it. Thank you.
Could you repeat that site?
Yes, it's ChooseWork, ChooseWork, ChooseWorkTTW.net. It's a website. The primary audience for that website is beneficiaries, but it includes a Find Help directory, and that's where one of the places where beneficiaries get a list of ENs serving their area, and you can search by state, by city and zip code. So if you want to narrow that down, do keep in mind that what that will do is give you a list of ENs serving that area, not necessarily ENs physically located in that area. We do have some organizations that serve nationwide, and so they will appear on every search, and then others that serve regionally across many states or single state. There are even some ENs that serve just select zip codes within a city. So smaller ENs with a smaller footprint, you may show up if you search for ENs near your house, but not show up if you search for ENs that serve your office location where you will go to work. So it can get as narrowed down as that.
Great question, Craig. And that's also known as a service directory. And does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's great. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Paul Luttrell. Please proceed.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Kevin. I responded to your prompt here.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Maybe Paul can give us some insight into what I look at as success in partnering with his senator.
Sure. First, I want to thank Kevin, because when we started looking at this partnering relationship here in Albuquerque, he was one of the people that we talked to and got input and advice and recommendations on. So he had a big hand in what we wound up doing. And basically, the way we have this set up with our AJC is that they are an employment network and we're an employment network. And we share responsibilities in terms of tickets, and they supply us with, and since they're an employment network, they've been through suitability. So in terms of the information on people in their database, they can share that information with us and we with them. And so once we once they give us the information of the folks who have registered in their system, then we screen those individuals to see who are ticket eligible, and then we follow up with contacting them. And we have a revenue split based on the input and work that we provide to the whole process compared to what they provide. And it's working out really, really well. It's getting better all the time. It took a while to do. I'm not going to sugarcoat that by any means. It took a lot of effort. You need to, if you're interested in that, you need to get to know your AJC people and find out what they're interested in, what they would like to see accomplished. We've established a great relationship with them, but it's taken 3 or 4 years to do, but it's been well worth it. And I'd be glad to answer any questions from Kevin or anybody else on what we did. So I think I'll stop there.